Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
This FPL season has definitely been go, go, go. A nonstop hustle all the time. Matches, deadlines, unexpected blank and double game weeks, on top of everything the real world has had in store. Sometimes you need a moment to turn off and hit reset. That's when you reach for Coors Light. It's made to chill. For me personally, supporting Fulham during this last year has been a true roller coaster ride. Honestly, when that Adama Traore goal flew past Areola in the 92nd minute of game week 31, the only thing that saved my mental state, the only thing that calmed my nerves, was cracking open a Coors Light. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. The mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. That way, you always know when it's time to chill. When you need to hit reset, just open a Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. And listen, everyone, summer is pretty much here. It's about to get hot in New York. An ice-cold Coors Light is such a perfect way for me to beat that summertime heat. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light and the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate. Hey, El Cheaters, and welcome to a special edition of the Always Cheating Podcast. This is a World Cup edition. My name is Josh. I'm here with Brandon. Brandon, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for asking, Josh. I had this thought. So we're two Americans. We're podcasting now about the World Cup. And I don't know if you identify this or if any other listeners out there around the world identify with this, but U.S. is not in the World Cup. I am now treated around my office and in my life as a curiosity, because the World Cup is still a huge thing. Even if you don't really care about football or soccer, you still know it's happening. Mm-hmm. So everyone in the office who knows I'm a football fan comes up to me and they're like, "So the World Cup, huh?" And I'm like, "Please, I don't want to talk about it like this. This is strange." And it's not, I don't want to come off as like superior or anything like that. But do you know what I mean?
I avoided too. There was, you know, so I have this open office plan at my job, and there were like four people like 10 feet away from me all talking about the World Cup. And I was just secretly, they don't know I'm a soccer fan. They don't know that I have an English Premier League fantasy podcast. They don't know any of this stuff. And I was like,
up that corporate ladder, Josh. Right, let the cat out of the bag.
Exactly. My dirty secret life. But I was just like, I can't even start to have this conversation, right? Because I'm going to come off like a know-it-all for one thing. You know, I'm not going to be it's not going to be easy. I'm not going to I don't know. It is weird because it's the one time when people in America, you know, in America, the people who are soccer fans or, you know, football fans in the rest of the world are by and large extremely passionate about the sport, extremely knowledgeable. So the World Cup comes along and it's such a cool, exciting event that it just brings out everybody else. And it's mostly pretty fun. It is hard.
Totally. The more the merrier when it comes to all this. And one thing that I also noticed in the buildup to the World Cup. So the U.S. is not in it, as perhaps you noticed. All of the media here in the U.S. has been, which team playing in the World Cup should you support as an American? Should it be Iceland? Should it be Portugal? Should it be Peru? Right. All of the above. And I thought that was just kind of corny, but bar none, everyone who has come up to me to talk to me about the World Cup, they have asked that exact same question. Who should I root for? So it is, it's really interesting.
Well, what do you tell
people
them?
Who are, what do I tell them? I do say Iceland. Iceland is absolutely the hipster pick, and everyone knows this, but you cannot dispute the fact that them being the smallest nation to ever play in the World Cup finals makes them just this incredibly enticing underdog for somebody who's just coming fresh to the World Cup. It's kind of a slam dunk for a recommendation.
Yeah, I think Mexico is a strong recommendation too, despite all the controversy in the United States about being a men's
Landon
US
Donovan
soccer
doing,
fan.
Yeah. Landon Donovan just doing a bank commercial.
If you can strip all that aside, they're a young team, really, really, you know, they played extremely well against Germany, obviously, just a really easy team to root for. I actually think Belgium is not a bad pick as a kind of hipster pick because they've really never done anything massive in the World Cup, right? I mean, they made the quarterfinals in 2014, but it's not like they have this incredible legacy of World Cup success. So,
and they look like they obviously have the potential to go far in the tournament. So if you're just looking to go along for the ride, Belgium could take you quite a ways.
I think the Serbia team is really good too. I really enjoyed watching them play. They're in Group E. They're top of Group E right now.
That is a great curveball pick. So say the guy in accounting who's just basically a New York Yankees fan is like, so World Cup, who should I root for? And you just throw out Serbia.
But this Serbia team is legit good. Like they could be like one of those sneaky like semifinal teams. It wouldn't be impossible. So Brendan, that gets us right into the podcast. So this is basically a two-part podcast. One is first impressions of the World Cup. We're going to try to keep it at least a little bit fantasy focused. That is our stock and trade, but it's kind of the way these groups are working. I mean, round two has already started. You know, even if we recorded last night, you would have had about 3 hours to listen to the podcast before the next round started. Mm-hmm. So, we're just going to talk about impressions of players so far. There are some players who are playing really well who are going to join the Premier League next year, or at least rumored to do so. So we're going to talk about them a little bit as well. We're also going to talk about the release of the 2018-19 Premier League fixtures. We identified a few teams to look out for. And then we're also going to talk a little bit about new acquisitions, new teams that have moved to the Premier League just in the first couple of months. There's already been
new players that have moved to the league, not new teams.
Right. Yeah, exactly. We'll talk about new teams later on. But lots of new players. There was a big one that was just announced today, actually. So we're going to get to that in the second half of the podcast. But for now, the way we're going to do this is we're going to answer a bunch of questions that we got from people on our Slack and on Twitter about the World Cup. And let's get right into it. FPL Chancer says, how great has this World Cup been so far? Is that a question, Brandon? It's almost like a statement, right? And he says,
you could end it with an exclamation point or a question mark, as FPL Chancer has done. So yes, question or statement, unclear.
And he says, how disappointing have the big teams been so far as well? So I think it's been a great World Cup. I don't know about you. I'm all in, man. I'm watching as much as I can.
Yeah, I think so much has happened and we've just gone through one round of games. I feel like we've lived through an entire World Cup at this point, the amount of upsets and great narratives that are unfolding. Right. All that said, I still don't even really know what the story of this World Cup is. It's just all kind of
it's the rise of Russian nationalism, Brandon. Russia is strong.
That's right. Putin will be our guest on next week's podcast. He'll be talking to us about his rule changes for FPL next season. Yeah. I'm really looking forward to that.
I mean, we said in our group A through D preview, like there was just no way that Russian nationalism is such a potent force that there was absolutely no way that Russia was not going to get out of their group. I never bought the low FIFA ranking. I mean, is anyone who knows their world history at all knows, how Russians feel about the fatherland.
Well, Josh, when you were there when they finally broke the siege at Stalingrad, that was your first thought, right? Like Russia will always do well when hosting the World Cup.
That was my first, second, and third thought, actually. Yeah, and it was an amazing moment. I was on the wrong side, sadly, it was a great moment. And then big teams disappointing. I mean.
Germany was really
basically true, right?
Yeah, Germany was the most shocking one to me. I mean, Mexico had that game plan down to a T, which was truly impressive. But to see Germany so seemingly lethargic, or complacent, I found shocking. I mean, there's still so much.
Timo Wimmer, what happened there, man?
I know. Yeah, I even brought Timo into my my McDonald's squad. He did nothing for me. The midfield seemed to be an issue there for Germany. Some disjointedness. Obviously, they were pushing their wingbacks. Like Kimmich was just coming up too far, not getting back, and they were completely exposed on the counterattack. Mexico was just waiting for that.
Ridiculously exposed. It was bizarre. Like how?
Yeah.
How
so is it just a matter of Germany being a little complacent, maybe a little bit naive about the tactics of Mexico? This is a mistake that they won't repeat. So kind of going back to what I was saying earlier, I still don't know what to say about Germany other than they kind of blew it in that first game.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think France, you know, I have Antoine Griezmann in my fantasy team, and he came through. We're going to talk a little bit more about what we like and don't like about the FIFA game in a couple minutes. But I love the bonus 2 points for winning the penalty. I mean, why not, right? I guess I'm just in favor of more things that win you points in
well,
the
that's
game.
Like that's like Mo Salah got 2 points for winning the penalty, and then what is it, 4 points for him scoring the penalty?
Well, that's exactly what happened with Griezmann. Yeah, so it's 8 points, you
gotcha.
Know, for a
right.
yeah, for 60.
So you can kind of it's like a fantasy onanism. You can assist yourself.
Yeah, exactly. I like that. Yeah, it's true. I mean. But the thing is, like, it is always a little unfair if you win a penalty and then the player misses the penalty, which is like a thing that seems to be happening increasingly, right? I mean, like Lionel Messi only makes like 45% of his penalties now.
Yeah,
like if you win a penalty, even if you're the player who misses it, I do think that there's something to be said for that's such a positive action that should be the equivalent of
sure.
It's not quite an assist, you know, but it's you're creating a huge chance.
Does Messi think he is a baseball player? Like a 300 average is great.
He was a very Mesut Ozil level penalty. I thought it was, you know, very Mesut Ozil. Like I'm amazed that he ever gets to take penalties because he sort of
yeah hit it
there.
At the perfect height for the keeper. Kind of hit it very close to the middle, et cetera, right. et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, it's like yeah, like thigh high in the middle of the goal. It seems like that's a pretty blockable spot.
Going back to the big teams who are disappointing, Brazil, this news is unfolding now that Neymar limped off the training pitch today.
Right.
And there's some question about his fitness for the round two fixture. That's got to be very concerning if you're a Brazil fan.
Yeah, although it's not like they don't have a lot of play. I mean, you know, Firmino could take that spot, right, pretty easily.
Yep.
I think with Brazil, it might be a psychological thing. Right. It doesn't seem like they're mentally very strong. You know, I mean, just the level of complaining they did about the referees after the first match. That's not the mark of a strong and confident team. Right. I mean,
yeah.
Give me a break. Like, that's just like Germany did not do that in 2014. Right. God, we're talking about Germany a lot. But
well,
it's
you are that those are conflicting football cultures, I'd say, like the South American football culture writ large and the sort of the dark arts versus just Germany writ large. But Brazil, yeah, they still do have a lot of firepower. That is a talismanic figure down, though, if Neymar is going to miss a couple of games. Yes, they have a boatload of talent, but you do wonder, well, okay, like cast your mind back to 2014 and Neymar went out with his back injury. Was that right before they went down to Germany?
Yeah, I think it was in the quarterfinals when that happened. I mean, he didn't play in that match. So, he kind of frustrating figure in the match anyway. I mean, he was involved in everything, but you know, I mean, it was not his finest performance.
I got exactly what I wanted out of that match because I put Coutinho in my FIFA squad and there he is with the 7-pointer. So boom.
Yeah, I had Neymar in mind, so I was watching with disgust throughout the match. Listen, I'm not going to complain about I'm not going to do the ugly American thing about complaining about diving, but it's I don't know. I mean, do we even want to talk about VAR? Do we even want to go down that road?
We do have a question, right? From I'll read it out, Josh. Gibran right. Trotta asks, based on what you've seen of VAR so far, how would you feel if it was introduced in the Premier League? So, first question for you, Josh, how do you feel it's going in the World Cup right now? And has it changed your mind at all?
I think on the pitch, it's been fine. It really hasn't been a problem. I think off the pitch is where it's worse. I mean, I feel like I'm watching the NFL, right? I mean, the NFL is a sport that is very much like the game, like, does not matter much anymore. It's a game that's watched by 75 million amateur lawyers every Sunday who just spend every single play complaining about the call and complaining about like whether this play is reviewable, like what counts as a catch. And this is like a VAR is, I don't know. I guess I don't really care about things being totally right. You know, I guess I just don't have that like kind of like whatever it is, this like feeling of like there is a right, like the either a player was fouled or he wasn't, you know.
There is no such thing as justice. We talk about this quote from Unforgiven, the Clint Eastwood movie, all the time. Hey. Where Clint Eastwood just says deserves got nothing to do with it.
Yeah, I just don't think that getting it right makes it a more interesting or fun game necessarily. And I just feel like, you know, like if the 10 talking points from the first week of the World Cup, it's like, you know, three of them are about the players, neither seven are VAR related, right? Yeah. It's like, that's like all anybody's talking about, at least in social media. And it's just a drag. It's just boring. I don't enjoy talking about it.
Yeah, I will say I have actually been blown away at how it's, for the most part, been a pretty seamless introduction in the World Cup. I mean, if you compare it to the Carabao Cup or wherever they had been using it in England before.
Right.
Or FA Cup, where they would just take minutes. And you can see the referee and the people in the van sort of working as a unit, as they should be. That said, it does bring out that grandpa in me where it's like, this is not the game that I'm a fan of. I would suggest that longtime fans have come to accept the injustice of it all.
I wasn't on social media as much as I am, I probably wouldn't really have a problem with VAR because I don't think it's really affected the viewing experience. I don't think it's slowed the games down at all. I just think it's like it's subject to abuse. Like once you introduce it, like everything is – I don't know. I guess it's just that I find, as I said a minute ago, I just find VAR is like a talking point. Like, should that penalty have been reviewed? Shouldn't have been. Was the player offside on that goal? Wasn't he? It's just boring to me. I just don't think it's very interesting. I'd rather talk about, you know, some amazing athletic achievement or like, you know, a tremendous defensive performance and, you know, like some, like analyzing a mistake to death, like just isn't interesting to me. I find it very dreary and kind of tedious. So
VAR, a bit like self-driving cars. No one will talk about self-driving cars unless they actually run somebody over and kill them. So VAR is fine until there is an awful mistake that's been made at some point during this World Cup. It probably will happen.
Right? I'm sure it's coming to the Premier League. I'm sure it'll be fine eventually. They'll work at all the kinks, but you know, I don't think like being a little suspicious of it makes you some like 19th century like Luddite, you know. Like I think it's reasonable to be like a little worried about how it's going to roll out.
Let me put it this way: there are a lot of FIFA. EA Sports FIFA players out there, I'm sure. That's a video game. It is a completely controlled environment. There are still calls that I believe they get wrong in that video game. They will never solve this problem.
All right. So Adam P says, this comes from Slack. He says, which players have you been the most and least impressed with so far? And which player from the opening round would you like to see in the Premier League?
So Diego Costa, I think I mentioned this in the Spain preview a couple podcasts ago. I thought Spain would sort of live or die based on Diego's performance in the number nine. Now, who knows if Costa continues to play, maybe they go with the strikerless formation, but I thought he looked so amazing. He was the guiding light for Spain in that Portugal match. His goal, opening goal, where he just destroyed Pepe and then shimmied through the entire Spanish defense.
Yeah,
I think that's my favorite goal. There have been some amazing goals scored in this World Cup. I think that's my heart's favorite goal right now.
I really liked that goal as well. I miss having him in the Premier League, right? I mean, I know if you're a Chelsea fan, you have more complicated feelings and maybe, I don't know. I always liked him, you know, maybe it's because I've gotten so into the fantasy game now and he had like the club part of it. Like you know, doesn't, I don't know. It's like, I feel like I can just enjoy him for how crazy he is.
Well, just, yeah, exactly. The narrative aspect of following the league, following the sport, he's a great player and also a terrific heel, to use like a wrestling term.
Right.
Just, I think you need a villain like that.
Right.
To keep the story going. So he's been great. I also have to shout out basically the entire Icelandic defense.
yeah.
They should all just come play for Burnley. And mm-hmm. I think that would be terrific. I just kept watching Iceland play and imagining the sensation of tackling Messi countless times in the 18-yard box. What a fun thing that would be. I mean, not to mention Halldorsen saving a Messi penalty in the World Cup. So yeah. Iceland defense and goalkeeper, you guys have a free pass. Come play in the Premier League.
Yeah, I totally agree. Obviously Ronaldo, right? I mean, that's kind of a given. We don't really need to bang on about him too much.
Yeah, he could come play for Burnley as well.
You know, the thing about the third goal that he scored, right? The 89th minute, you know, hat trick completer, is it's one of those goals. It almost looks easy. Like when a free kick like that is scored, it almost looks easy. Like it's like, oh, that's, yeah, sure. Of course. That's, you just kick it straight. You know,
well, you've shared these stories many times in the pod of Christian Eriksen lining up a free kick around that same spot for Spurs, and you just say, well, that's going in, and sure enough it does. And that was exactly how it was for Ronaldo. Not to compare Eriksen and Ronaldo, but you know what I mean.
Well, I mean, Eriksen was amazing, actually, I thought, in that Denmark game too. I mean, his assist to score that first goal was incredible. But I, what I was gonna say actually is that, you know, is the next day, and I really hate doing Messi versus Ronaldo comparisons, but how many times did Messi have a free kick in those situations? You know, like in very similar spots in the second half of that game, and he couldn't convert. And it's just, it's hard to score a free kick. It's not like, you know, like when they go in, it looks easy, but, or kind of easy, I guess, but like, you know, but how many times do you see it just boot right into the wall, right? That's what happens. Yeah. Or you go under, which is what happened today, which was fantastic.
Sure.
That was the,
we talked about this, how that, Messi performance against Iceland, on the back of Ronaldo's performance, that's one of those games that, who knows what it means for Argentina long run in this tournament, or, I mean, not to diminish Messi at all, but that's one that will stick out in his legacy. Yep. It's a strange one.
I will nominate the entire Serbian team as well. We talked about them a little bit earlier, but Sergej Milinkovic-Savic, I think I'm saying that correctly. He plays for Lazio. It looks like he might move to Manchester United this summer. That's kind of what's on the table right now. He was so good. And I don't think he ultimately even like picked up an assist in the game, but he was just all over the ball. He was incredibly dangerous, just awesome player. And that whole team is just, Alexander Mitrovic, unfortunately, was like in Newcastle form, not Fulham form. Mm-hmm. In the match.
Right.
I don't know. You missed the Serbia game, right?
Yeah, I didn't catch it. I did hear that he missed. He blew quite a few opportunities. Yeah,
that team is just set up really well. I mean, with Milinkovic-Savic, you know, as an attacking mid, then you've got, you know, Modric in the middle, Mitrovic, who I think was okay. He just couldn't quite convert, but, you know, got those great fullbacks and
Kolarov with a total bazooka, as we've come to know from him.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I guess Ivanovic, a fullback, he's a little bit, he can do both, right? He's a right back or a
right. I guess he's a product of the four at the back system. So who knows? Right. Who knows what the modern Ivanovic is?
Right. Any young players that you've been impressed with? Like anybody you'd like to see in the league?
Well, the obvious pick here is Chucky Lozano for Mexico. In Mexico, that whole team looked electric. And Lozano was... He would look so fast, looked really great on the ball, excellent composed finish there. I will say, like, Chicharito, I've never been a huge fan of him in the last, you know, handful of years in the Premier League, but he was doing a real job for Mexico. Usually his role, when you see him in league play, is fox in the box or poacher, that sort of thing. But him initiating or creating opportunities on the counterattack, doing a little bit of hold-up play, he really looked fantastic for Mexico. But Chucky Lozano, great young player. And the two guys who played off on the right for Peru, Paulo Guerrero and Andre Carrillo,
yes.
I think those are the two guys that had the bleach blonde hair. they both looked sensational in what was, you know, ultimately a losing effort. But those guys were, they look like powerhouses, really quick.
You know, Christian Cueva, the guy who missed the penalty, played really well as well. That Peru team, that was a heartbreaking loss. I mean, I know they like
they gave it everything.
Yeah, there a lot of people have talked about the incredible number of fans they brought to Russia. And
what is it, 60,000?
It's just incredible, and it's not the big of a country, you know, and all these like little 5'5" guys, you know, just running around, and I can't see them getting out of this group, but I'm definitely rooting for them.
Yeah. All right. We have a question from our friends at Who Got the Assist. What's been the biggest surprise for you watching the group stages so far? So, you know, you've got Iceland tying Argentina, Mexico upsetting Germany. We talked about this at the top. Russia, never underestimate Russian nationalism. But for them to have the stat that was making the rounds today after the Egypt match was Russia has now scored 8 goals. That's the exact number of goals that Spain scored during the entire World Cup winning run in 2010.
Yeah, the kind of a team wide. I mean, the Cheryshev thing is amazing, right? Because he's, you know, he didn't even start that match, right? He came on after Zhaglov went off with an injury.
Right.
You know, has picked up 3 goals now and 3 goals in 2 matches. And he looks, when I first saw him, I thought he was fat. I was like,
okay.
But he just like, he looks really bulky, but it turns, I think he's just got like these giant delts. He's got like a swimmer's body or something.
Okay.
And it makes him look really bulky, but it's like I think he's just very big up top. But anyway, that's probably more information than you need to
he's
know.
Like,
but
he's like the opposite of Eden Hazard. He's not big in the bottom. He's big up top.
Yeah. I think the biggest surprise for me is just, how good their, the midfield has looked for Russia. You know, it's just, it looks like, and the defense actually too, right? I mean, I think they only, did they concede any shots on goal in play in that, in their first 2 games? Maybe it was like 1 shot on goal or something like that. I mean, they've really, you know, they've really, you know, been much stronger defensively than anybody expected.
Yeah.
This is a team that has like, you know, it's kind of a mashed together defense. A lot of injuries, a lot of players. I know one guy came out of retirement to play in that defense. So, I mean, you've got a Brazilian guy in there. Like, what's going on?
what is going on? We have made it this far into the podcast. I don't know if we can lump this in with surprises, but we obviously the bulk of our listenership is from the UK or English listeners. What have you made of England after their first game against Tunisia?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you got to give them credit for winning that game, right? I mean, Tunisia's not bad, right? I mean, they're ranked, 22nd in the world or something like that. Just because like nobody, just because you've never heard of those players doesn't mean they don't play well as a team, you know? So I think, I don't know. I think, Harry Kane is amazing as we thought. It's frustrating that Sterling hasn't played better. I don't know. I mean, it's like Sterling is so good and just, it's almost like you wanted Pep to coach the England squad, meet up with Southgate and be like, here's how to get the best out of them. You know,
yeah,
it's like,
here are all the cheat codes, Southgate. Now go win the World Cup.
Yeah. I mean, the number of goals that Sterling has, I mean, I know he joined the team really young, so that probably skews his numbers a little bit. But he really should have many, many more goals for the English national team than he does. I think, he's got 2 goals in 39 appearances.
Yeah.
Which seems really low, right? I mean, for, you know, especially given the way Sterling can really beat up on bad teams, you'd think he would have racked up like a hat trick in a friendly or something.
Yeah. Not to be a total homer, but the win reminded me of the U.S.'s opening match against Ghana in 2014. And Dempsey scored in like the first 5 minutes. Then Ghana drew 1-1, and it took a Jonathan Brooks header on a set piece to win. And it was like the 86th minute or whenever he scored. And listen, England fans, you will make it out of the group if the U.S. v. Ghana is anything to predict.
I don't
think that makes you feel any better. But England obviously has a much better team than we did 2014.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're definitely going to go through. They've already defeated Tunisia. You know, they just have to win that Panama game, right? And they're basically through. So, probably second place in that group.
All right, what's the next question?
Next question comes from Jeremiah Johnson. He says, is there any history of an FPL player going farther into the World Cup and it affecting his FPL play one way or the other? Are they more likely to be rested, or is the break big enough to not worry one way or the other? It's a very good question.
Yeah, I read Jeremiah's question when we were getting ready for the pod, and my first thought was not actually of the World Cup, but Alexis Sanchez coming out of the Copa America when Chile won. And
I thought of Sanchez too.
Yeah, he missed like the first month of the Premier League season, if I remember correctly, and it took him a while to get up and running again. So if you're the star player, particularly one of Alexis's caliber, where you're really expending a lot of energy for your team, I think it does definitely bite into your output when the league season starts.
Yep. These guys are going to get an extended break. Honestly, anybody who makes it into the elimination stages of the World Cup, especially the quarterfinals or later, those are players you're going to be very cautious about adding your squad. I mean, honestly, it won't be that hard because they just won't, like, it'll be telegraphed well in advance. You know, like, they just won't be playing the first, you know, 2 or 3 weeks of the season.
Yeah. FPL King, who he'll get his fair due in the middle of this podcast. So we'll come back to you, King. He asks, after watching the likes of Brazil, Germany, France, and Argentina all really fall flat after round one, do you still see the winner in that pool above, or could someone else prevail in this World Cup? So if you had to call it after just one round of matches, Josh, who's the dark horse to actually win? I mean, do you believe Serbia could win? Is Belgium actually in contention?
Yeah, that's a good question. Do I think Serbia could win the World Cup? No. I mean, do you think England could win the World Cup?
After watching round one, I would honestly believe anything. I mean, I could see Ronaldo winning the World Cup with Portugal, they did in the Euros, which is something I think I would have poo-pooed before the World Cup started. I believe anything at this point.
How about this? Could you imagine Russia winning the World Cup?
That would actually be weirdly cool, I guess.
I kind of could believe it, right? I mean, I guess that's two wins against two bad teams influencing me a little bit. I mean, Egypt's okay, but like two straight wins, you know, so there's probably some recency bias here, but just given how fired up they are, I don't know. I could see it. I mean,
question. Yeah. Would the world go to war if Russia won the World Cup?
I mean, let's say you're France right now. If you're France, would you want to play Russia in a like quarterfinal match?
Yeah, it's interesting, yeah.
Right?
No one would. No one would.
No. If you're Belgium,
Spain or Germany, maybe because they have the generally recent experience would be less afraid. But even still,
yeah. I mean, this is assuming Germany makes it out of their group. Right. Which,
yeah, I think it was Ryan O'Hanlon on The Ringer. He made the hot take of Germany doesn't make it out of their group. And I laughed at that hot take. Mm-hmm. But
I can't believe you read The Ringer's soccer coverage.
We're not recommending it. FYI.
It's like a little too hot take for my taste. Right, it's not serious enough because I'm a total snob now. I don't know. Is there anyone else? I mean, let me ask you this question. Give me two teams that you think could win the World Cup based on the first round of fixtures.
I suppose Belgium, because it took Belgium a while to get up and running. But when the pieces come together, when they started scoring goals, it's just one match. But when you see De Bruyne playing a pass, threading the needle like that, and Lukaku is scoring, Hazard and De Bruyne are playing the way they're going to play, that's brilliant. And I do not want to underestimate their chances just to put a full campaign together.
Yeah, I think I'll put Spain up there. I think the thing that had me a little worried about Spain is, did they have a forward, you know, who could score goals for them? And, you know, Diego Costa has not had a great run out in earlier years. I mean, the 2014 World Cup, you know, was just a massive flop for Costa. Maybe still feeling the effects of, you know, basically not playing for Brazil, right? And yeah, playing for Spain instead. And then having to go to Brazil to play in the World Cup. And that probably had messed his head a little bit. Yeah. But I think Spain, I mean, what can you do about Ronaldo, right? I mean, you know, but I didn't come away feeling unimpressed with Spain just as a result of that.
Yeah.
And that team is just, you know, loaded like front to back.
Somewhat rooting for Spain to finish second in that group to get a very early matchup between Uruguay and Spain.
That'd be awesome. Yeah.
Uruguay still like uncontested best front two with Cavani and Luis Suarez. However, they did nothing in their first match, which wiped out a lot of FIFA fantasy teams.
Yeah, I know. I had Cavani. Yeah. I had like a total captain fail. Like just, I ended up having to captain Maya Yoshida. Like there were so many failures like every day. And then I should have just kept it on. I had it on Griezmann, and then I moved it again onto Neymar. Cause I was like, I think I can do better than 8 points. I could not.
Well, it's incredibly ridiculous to try and predict the winner right now. So let's forget we ever tried to answer that question. Next question comes from Tom Campbell. Quick question about the successful bid to host the World Cup for the United States, Canada, and Mexico. How excited are you guys, and are you intending to go to a heap of the games? Any particular countries you'd like to see? Tom, I'm thrilled to say that all the anxiety about the U.S. actually qualifying for 2026 is gone. So yeah, I'd love to see the U.S. play.
I am I'm a huge 10 out of 10 in terms of excitement. I was really, you know, Wednesday morning when we woke up last week, and I found out, you know, because it was really early in the morning when it was revealed in the United States. It made my day. I mean, I was just so excited. I mean, it's 8 years from now. So like, you know, who even knows if the United States will like exist in 8 years, but you know, we're still kicking around, you know, it's going to be amazing. I mean, 8 years is so far away though. It's hard to like,
I know. I almost had a heart attack thinking about how old I'm going to be in 2026, but can we stop and talk about how insane it is that in effect, an entire continent is hosting the World Cup?
It's great.
Qatar is hosting. You could fit Qatar into my pocket, or Qatar, or however we want to pronounce it.
Right.
It could fit in my pocket. We still need the giant landmass that is Canada. We're all going to truck up to Edmonton.
If it was the United States alone, they never would have won because people hate Trump so much. And even the thought of double the profit, I don't think would have been enough to get it. I think you needed Mexico and Canada as buffers, basically.
All right, a question for you, Josh. So we live in New York. Do we want to go see World Cup matches in New York, or should we just travel to California?
Wow, good question. Let's travel to Mexico, actually.
Yeah.
Let's go to El Azteca. That'd be amazing. All right, let's start saving up for that now. Final question, comment from Samuel West says, favorite moment thus far at the start of the U.S. broadcast of Japan versus Colombia, the broadcasters let off with, let's play soccer. I love it. And I loved it too. I loved it too, Samuel. It was so ridiculous. I mean,
the U.S. like, broadcasters are insane. During the Peru-Denmark game, there was this Mexican broadcaster on Fox who is – he's
very
a
famous broadcaster, famous for his – you know, his long goal, you know, celebrations.
Jorge Perez Navarro is his name. He kept making references to Aerosmith songs. And there was this moment when Christian Eriksen was taking a free kick, and he does the build up to Eriksen making the kick, and he goes, Christian Eriksen with the free kick. And right as he kicks it, he yells, fire.
We were talking on the Slack about this. I was excited about it. You were a little... It was a little too much. I actually hated it, and then I loved it. I like came around on it because it was so it is the World Cup. You know, it's like it deserves some pomp.
there was some pomp. It was fun, but there is a way to do it. Like Ray Hudson is a completely ridiculous broadcaster, but in his ridiculousness, it comes across that he knows the game. He is enmeshed in the action on the field. This Jorge Perez Navarro, he was riffing like he was just at a backyard barbecue watching it on TV.
I will respectfully disagree with you on Ray Hudson. I can't. I actually can't listen to a game if Ray Hudson is calling it.
Well, Liz, I'm not like riding hard for Ray Hudson here, but as a point of comparison, Jorge does get bonus points for when Denmark actually did score the goal. In our preview podcast, our listeners know we made much of the nicknames of all the teams, and Denmark are the Red Dynamite. When Denmark scores, he yells, "Boom goes the dynamite!" So that was pretty
cool. Danish Dynamite, aren't they?
The Danish Dynamite, not the Red Dynamite. So there you go.
Right. Red Devils, yeah.
Right?
Who are the Red Devils? That's Belgium, right?
Right, and Manchester United. But yeah, Belgium on the international stage, if we want to split hairs here, Josh. Are we talking about the World Cup or what?
All right, let's take a quick break. We want to run down the top 10s of our leagues. I also want to compare the FIFA World Cup game with the FPL game. So let's take a break. We'll be right back.
Same old podcast, always cheating.
Brandon, as we've talked about in earlier podcasts, our Patreon Set and Forget World Cup League is up and running. We had well over 100 people, right? 110 names, something like that, ultimately.
More than 110. I think it was 117 in the end from our Patreon supporters group.
Yeah, a ton of Patreon supporters participated, and basically you had to pick one team from all of these various pots. I'm amazed. I was a little worried that everyone was going to have the same team, but I'm only the same as one other person, and even then we have a couple different tiebreakers. Is there one person you have the same picks with as well?
There are a few people I think I have the same picks as, but our tiebreakers are enough to split the difference. So we did mention this
on 100 goals in the World Cup final.
Combined 100 goals for the eventual Golden Boot winner. I did mention on the Patreon Slack that there will be blood sport if the eventual winners tie in both tiebreakers. So look forward to that.
All right, you want to read the top 10?
Yeah, so the top 10 on the set and forget game is we had a tie in 10th place, Rob Butler and Pratik Mali. Then it's William Syme, Sean Macken. This is working up to first place. Ricardo Atunes, Lou Gutierrez, Rick Hortensius. Sorry, Rick. Josh Landon, never heard of him.
That's me.
Jesse Halstead tied with Josh Landon and Rick and Lou. And Ricardo, and Sean, and William, all you guys on 23 points. Jesse Halstead, 23 points. And then second place with 23.5 is Craig Morrison. Tied with Craig is Patty Brown, FPL King. So anything could happen here still on Set and Forget.
That's right. And we have a few Patreon thank yous as well. Picked up several new Patreon supporters since our last podcast. Thank you to Matt Massett, Craig Morrison, Pratik Mali, Sasha Cole, Mike Duncan, Eric Freeman, Dominic, and Sean. So thank you to all you guys. If you'd like to become a Patreon supporter, you can join, which means you join our Slack where we talk about strategy and World Cup threads. And we have an Ask Us Anything thread that you and I were talking about Landon Donovan on this week. And there's, once the season starts, actually, that's when it really, when the Premier League season that is starts, it really kicks into, super gear. So, visit patreon.com/alwayscheating. It's you can pledge for 1 month and drop out. There's no like massive commitment. You can literally pledge $3 and then you can leave and we'll accept that. So.
And we'll never speak of it again. No questions asked. So Josh, you wanted to talk quickly about the FIFA World Cup game. What do we like? What do we dislike about this game? It bears some striking similarities to FPL. But there are some things that do make it different.
Yeah. And before we do, I thought I'd run down the top 10 of that as well. So not as many real names in this one. The Premier League game makes it a little easier because they have actual real names on here. But I think there's a couple names you will recognize on here. So,
Josh, when you start an account with FIFA.com, are you really going to want to use your real name?
I signed up through my Facebook account. So I was really, yeah. And we got a tie for ninth, two-way tie for ninth, Blazing Squad and Muller's Millers, FPL Fatty and Big Time Charlies are tied for seventh. The General's Troops, that's FPL General, is in sixth. He's had a very good start to his.
Well done, Mark.
Yep. Blaze Matuidi's squad is in fifth. RR World Cup 2018 is in fourth. The FPL Physio, another Twitter account that another strong Twitter account is in third. Tomaboy, Ireland's Lost Sons, is in second. And Padsy 13, aka the Fantasy King, is in first place with 97 points.
True to his name. The last I talked to Paddy on the Slack, he was number one, I think, in England or whatever nation he's hailing as his own, having a great start to the World Cup fantasy game.
Yeah, I'm impressed. We were so busy getting all the Patreon stuff together, and I just didn't put as much time into my team as I could. I have such a quick turnaround too. But
So let's talk about that. I've got my team pulled up here. If I had any issue with the FIFA McDonald's game, it's that it requires quite a bit of, it's like having a, what do you call those? Like a Tamagotchi, those little digital pets that you have to like feed all the time or else they die.
Right.
That is how I feel about this team. I need to keep feeding it every night. So I had Luis Suarez up front and I captained him. And of course he blanked in his first match, and it was Friday night. I was out. I was having fun. I was hanging out with friends, and I did not switch the armband before the next round of fixtures started at 9 a.m. here in New York, or 6 a.m. here, 6 a.m. Yeah. So my armband was stuck on Luis Suarez. That said, I feel like I made some good picks on my McDonald's team. I had Big Rom up front with 10 points, Philip Coutinho in the midfield, Isco in the midfield. He almost had a worldie there against Portugal that bounced just off the goal line. And I jumped on the Granqvist bandwagon there for Sweden, a 12-pointer. And Muslera for Uruguay in goal with a 7-pointer. So I think I finished there with 52 points. How does it compare to how you did? I can't even find your team anywhere. How'd you do?
I don't know. I'm in there somewhere. I didn't do as well. My forward line really let me down outside of Griezmann, and my defense too. I made a bunch of late last minute switches. I sort of let some groupthink get to me. I got talked out of a few players, and I ended up with no clean sheets, which really hurt me. And then just, one captain fail after another. James Rodriguez not playing today until the 30th minute. That was really annoying. Christian Eriksen came through for me, almost had a goal in his game as well. So,
yeah.
I have to admit, I am not, it's fun to do it because it gives you a little extra, like it's just a little extra reason to follow the games and whatever stuff. But as anyone who listens to this podcast knows, I take the FPL game way too seriously. I take it 150% seriously. When, something like 80% would be a lot healthier. This game, I'm just not taking that seriously. I mean, I made my swaps for game week two. I actually brought in Ronaldo for, nice. Part of the fun for me was to have players that, that I've just never had before. It's fun to have Ronaldo in your team. It's fun to have Antoine Griezmann.
It's Cavani. Also fun to have Romelu Lukaku when he's actually scoring goals. So
yeah,
it took the true. World Cup yeah. for that to happen.
Yeah, exactly. So let's talk about the game itself a little bit though. I want to stay positive here. So let's talk about, there are some things I actually like about the game in comparison to the FPL game. So shifting captains and swapping out players is the biggest thing, right? That you can, if your captain fails on Friday, you can shift to a new captain on Saturday. If a player doesn't, as long as they don't get a red card, if a player, if a defender loses a clean sheet or a player blanks, you could swap them out for someone on your bench. And I don't know. I think I might like that if it came to the FPL game. Wouldn't be able to do it quite as often because the games are typically just on 2 days, sometimes three. But would that be an edge for people who take the game more seriously?
I suppose it would. And I think that's something we've seen with the chips where the FPL towers, they're trying to avoid that. They're trying to be a little more inclusive with the game. The chips are debatable what the impact of that has actually been, but Also, in a way, I guess the shifting of captains and swapping out of players makes the game even more friendly to newbies because it's more forgiving. How many times, you know, have you set the wrong captain? And that's right. that's just how it goes with FPL, and you have to move on.
I wonder if it would even things out in a way that would be annoying, though, too. Like, would it flatten scores too much?
You have to believe it would. You look at what happened with Mo Salah in the past season. Like, so many people lost ground because they believed gambler fallacy style that Salah was going to cool down at some point. So they kept captaining Kane, and Kane would blank. And the people who kept the faith with Salah they just kept armbanding him, shifted ahead. If you could have swapped, everyone would have landed on Salah every single week. And that's just a facet of the game that's taken off the table.
Right. I think that's true. It would also help players with stronger benches. I mean, even if you couldn't swap out captains, but you could just swap out underperforming players for bench players, that would be a huge edge, right? And I don't think that would I don't think that would flatten scores out in the same way. I think that would be something that could really encourage people to think about their whole team and really make your bench even more valuable, right? I mean, right now a bench you can get by with a bad bench throughout, you know, a good maybe the first 10 or 15 weeks of the season.
Often, oh, I've done right? it. And, I've done it.
Yeah. At least like your third bench spot, you know? And so you know, be able to swap out a goalkeeper if if they, have an underwhelming performance or something like that. I don't know. I like that idea. There's usually enough matches on Sunday that you'd be able to keep a couple players in the hole, you know? So, yeah, I don't know. It's kind of fun going into that opening match with Zhagoev, who limped off in the 22nd minute, which is, you know, super frustrating, especially when they conceded, when they scored five goals. But to be able to go into that match, like a match I wasn't that interested in, to be honest. I mean, it was interesting because it was the opening match of the World Cup, but, Russia, Saudi Arabia. I mean, it wasn't like I was super jacked for that game, but to go into it with like, I mean, I went and watched it, you know, I couldn't resist. But knowing that I had a captain in that game did give it like a little extra juice, you know.
The goals in that game, I mean, for how crummy Saudi Arabia were, I mean, Russia were scoring just like, those are some incredible goals.
That free kick goal at the end was great. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So the last thing I'll say, shifting captains, I think it's really great in theory. I think it works for a short tournament style thing. Does it work in actual practice for FPL? I have no idea.
Yeah. Be interesting. It'd be interesting to try it or roll out a version of the game that had it or something. I don't know. I think I'd be in favor of it, though. Maybe I'm just like, I would like to do this. Maybe do this, but you can't have chips or something. Dropping chips and adding these, I would be.
I think that's right. I think that's right. Okay, so points for winning and losing.
Points for winning, then you lose. Yeah, if you're the one who concedes a penalty, you lose points as well.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. You concede the penalty. You lose. Okay. Right. And we talked about this with Griezmann and Salah, how they were able to assist themselves. The wonderful fantasy onanism that it is. We're generally in favor of this. Like, I don't know that we have to discuss it too much. It seems fair. No. It's only fair.
We're in favor of more points.
Maximum captain. This is a chip. I haven't even dug deep enough into the FIFA.com game to figure out how to even play the maximum captain.
Yeah, I mean, basically, the highest scoring player in your starting 11 becomes the captain that game week. It's a chip you have to use before the match starts.
So
before the match week starts.
So how do you play it? I'm looking at the interface right now.
I think you just press it. I don't know. I haven't played it either. It's like
Google it, Brandon. Google it.
Yeah, I think going into the next match is when you'd have to play it, Brandon.
Okay. So like, this is another one where
click on round three.
Okay. Yeah, this is another one that I think it's cool. Great. It makes sense. It seems forgiving. It's nice.
Would you rather have this chip over bench boost or triple captain, free hit chip?
I think so. I think all of the above. It definitely bench boost.
Yeah.
Triple captain is a bit more of a gamble. I think that's what makes that chip really exciting, is it's a high ceiling, but it's also a risk, whereas the maximum captain is low risk. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right. I think that's, it'd be like a little less stressful, you know, you just set it and hey, all right, let's go guys. Yeah. It'd be fun for a double game week.
why am I playing FPL if I'm not stressed out? All right. That's the whole appeal of the game, right?
The final thing that I like about the FIFA World Cup game is the little slider for the price ranges.
This is stupid. Yeah, cool. It's fun to slide things. It's fun to push buttons and all of this, but it adds nothing. It's ridiculous.
Well, I don't like the way the FIFA game forces you into – they keep shifting the prices for you. Suddenly, like, you're looking at one team and the max price you can – the lowest price you can put it is 4.3, and then it's 5.2, and it's like just – I like the consistency, just 0.5. I got my little slider, I move it over, and then I start sorting from there. I just like the way they sorted all this stuff. I think it's easier to look at it than it is.
You also want the little Russian World Cup wolf dog thing to talk to you, to give you fun messages like he's Clippy in Microsoft Word.
I'm into that dog. Yeah, that'd be awesome, actually, if he popped up.
Okay, bring the Russian wolf dog to FPL. That's the big lesson there.
All right, so while we're talking FPL, the fixtures have been released, Brandon, the 2018-19 fixtures. First thing is a bit of news. If you're on Twitter, you may have seen this, but Brandon, you and I are going to the United Kingdom.
Yes, we are. We're coming to the UK. It's the reverse Beatles. So, you know, it was a big deal when the Beatles came to the US. Now it's a big deal. We're the American, to really stretch this as far as I possibly can, we're the American Beatles of FPL in the United States.
Yeah, I don't even follow that. But
yeah, think totally about it. Just think. Don't think about it too hard.
I agree.
Think about
it. I won't think about it. I'll disagree with you. So it looks like we're looking at...
We're the Kings of Leon, basically.
Yeah, I think the first week of October is what we're looking at right now.
Yeah, Fulham Arsenal at Craven Cottage. That's looking like what we're going to build our trip around. And a perfect one for the cheaters, because those are both our clubs.
Exactly. And I think we're going to try to get in that Thursday and hopefully catch an Arsenal Europa League match as well. Mm-hmm. And then possibly take a trip up to Manchester, Liverpool area. I mean, I'd be willing to go all the way, like, up to... up to Newcastle or Sunderland maybe not Sunderland.
That's
League Two now.
So Newcastle plays Old Trafford that weekend. And we're taking recommendations from all the listeners, but here's another option. If we're London bound, they haven't announced when the Spurs Cardiff game, if it's happening on a Saturday as well, or maybe it's the Sunday, that'll be the second match played in Spurs' new stadium. That could be pretty fun.
That's true. So
Anfield, Liverpool's hosting Man City.
I assume these tickets are all like impossible to get, but you know, we'll figure
it
out.
We have friends.
Exactly. So if you have any tips on matches we should watch, stadiums we should visit, neither of us have actually been to any UK stadiums to watch matches. So any recommendations, I will gladly take. Places to stay, if you know a great Airbnb in London, let us know about that too. But yeah, we're super excited about that. So lots, while we're there, we definitely want to do some meetups.
Yep.
It'd be awesome to do like a live podcast recording if that were doable. But at the very least, we've just made a ton of friends in the UK over the last few years. And a lot of them have come to visit us in New York, and we're looking forward to returning.
Yeah, first and foremost, we want to go to your Black Horse Tavern, wherever you live in the UK.
Yeah, exactly. So, so I'm really excited about that. Brandon, you've got some teams to focus on early on in the season.
Yeah, so just looking at the first 3, 4, 5 weeks of the season, I was crawling through the fixture list just to see what the matchups are. Handful of teams immediately jump out at me just based on fixture runs. And of the heavy hitters, Chelsea. So Chelsea is going to be an interesting proposition going into this next season, because they'll have a new manager. They will not have Champions League obligations. And they're starting out with Huddersfield. Huddersfield, Arsenal, then Newcastle, Bournemouth, Cardiff. So Chelsea could be one to watch at the start. Lower down the table, and a team that, of course, came on midway through the season, Crystal Palace. They start off on the road with a London derby against my beloved Fulham in game week one. And then let's see, then they host Liverpool, obviously going to be a tough match. But after that, for Palace, it's Watford, Southampton, and Huddersfield.
So, you know, the only problem here is that Will Zaha is going to come in at a super annoying price, right? He's going to be like 8.5 million or something like that.
Yeah. So Milivojevic might actually be a very popular fourth midfielder at the start of the season, sure. I'm guessing, because, of course, he's really he's on pens. Yeah, on all that stuff. So I think Milivojevic might be one to target, depending on what Zaha's price tag is. Liverpool, kind of a tricky proposition. Like Sadio Mane and Mo Salah coming off the World Cup. Salah, of course, who knows what the deal is. He looked fine today against Russia, but injuries aside. And Klopp with his penchant for rotation. All that in mind, Liverpool start off hosting West Ham. Then they have Palace. Then Brighton, followed by Leicester. And then they're away to Spurs, looks like in game week four. So anyway, Liverpool, depending on how they look in the pregame fixtures, might be one to watch. Also, the last two teams that I'm going to flag are Burnley and Everton. Everton, lots of question marks there because they were a very oddball team last season. But they've got promoted side Wolves in game week one. And then it's Southampton, Bournemouth, Huddersfield, West Ham before they are away to Arsenal. So a decent lineup for them. Burnley, let's see. Let me run through their fixtures real quick. They start off with Southampton, and then it's Watford. No disrespect to you, Watford. We love you. Then Fulham, and then they hit Manchester United. So at least a decent first three fixtures for Burnley.
All right. So, you know, it's fun to even just like sort of dip our toe in that water a little bit, you know, just to start thinking about a few players.
Yeah, it really is. And from those five teams, it's like I'm not even – those aren't teams where I'm like, oh, yeah, there's a – it's captain sensible. Obviously, Man City is going to be a hugely rated team. Manchester United bringing in probably some new players.
Yeah, well, and back to Jeremiah's question earlier. I mean, you know, if Eden Hazard and Belgium make the semifinals or something or win it, you know, he's – probably not going to be on the team at the start of the season, right? I mean, there's a good chance that he won't play until, you know, game week two or three. I mean, I feel like when Ozil came back from the 2014 World Cup, he didn't play at least the first couple of weeks of the season, you know? Yeah. So I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, a lot, you know, there might be some odd looking teams at the start of the season with a lot of early wild cards. Once these players start to come back in.
Yeah, it's very weird looking at these fixtures because you look for your favorite sort of fantasy team. Say, just take Man City or any of these teams, Man City or Arsenal or Spurs or United. You're like, oh, good fixture. Then the next week it's like, weird fixture. So all these game weeks exist in a complete fantasy vacuum right now. And I really don't know holistically how to feel about it.
Yeah, so we'll have like a million preview podcasts to talk about that.
Yeah.
Other thing we want to talk about quickly are just some new acquisitions. These are more like highlights and quick hits. We'll go more in depth, you know, going into the season. But just running through a few teams have done some big business or, you know, I don't know, big. I wouldn't say there's any like gigantic signings, but just a lot of like solid mid-level signings.
Yeah, I feel like we need a big business sort of like sound effect there. Big business.
Arsenal, just today they signed Bernd Leno. I'm not sure if I'm saying that correctly. He comes from Bayer Leverkusen. Most likely, given how much the money they paid for him, is going to become their starting keeper. I think he's like 26 years old. He's really talented player. He's got some caps with the German national team. A little mistake prone. I think I read that in the last 3 years, only one other keeper has made more mistakes than he has that have led to goals. So a little bit of a concern, but he was also pretty young. You know, a lot of goalkeepers mature a little bit later. So
just look at David De Gea. He's still making mistakes.
They also brought in Stefan Lichtsteiner, who looks like a total badass, right? He comes from Juve. He'll be like 35 by the time the season starts. But
that's
awesome.
The one flag, isn't it? Like if you've got what's his face on the right hand side there.
Barron, but
Hector Bellerin.
Yeah, I don't think he's brought in to be a full-time starter. I think it's kind of he came out of free, you know. I think it's just like he's kind of a babysitter. Mentor him, push him a little bit. You know, I'm sure he'll end up playing like 20 games, but I don't think he's like I don't think he's brought in to replace Barron.
Can we say for the record there will be no Jay Leno jokes or puns made at Burns' expense? Can we just say that at the outset?
That's already happening. I've already seen it all over Twitter.
Jeez. Okay.
Per Mertesacker retired. That's very sad.
That is
Benny Cazorla released. Yeah. Jack Wilshire is gone.
That is a weird one. Well, weird is not really the right word. It's fascinating. Where does Jack go from here? What team does he end up at?
Yeah, maybe back at Bournemouth. That wouldn't be a surprise. Yeah. I think a club at that Bournemouth level, maybe Everton. I'm just trying to think of like a. It'd be cool if he went like if he like tried, you know, France or something like that, or like tried to. He seems like the kind of guy who would not do that. He seems very English to me.
He wants to be in his comfort zone.
Yeah.
So Jack goes in, has a meeting with Unai Emery, and Emery says, no, this isn't happening.
Yeah, he's like, I like guys who can play more than 15 matches a season.
Okay, you've also got noted here, Takuma Asano. I'm glad to know that Takuma exists.
Right. That was more of a copy and paste job there.
zero appearances for Arsenal, but it was nice knowing you, Takuma.
How about this one? I was surprised by this one. I somehow missed this. Ramadan Sobhi moved from Stoke City to Huddersfield Town.
That's cool. I always had a soft spot for Sobhi. You know, Stoke City is just a weird club for anyone to really fit into, particularly as an attacking player. So yeah looking forward to
toys.
Yeah, exactly. So that's interesting. I'll be watching him.
Leicester, really good business so far defensively.
Big business.
Ricardo Pereira. Or maybe it's Perea. He is a fullback signed from Porto. He had 2 goals and 7 assists and 43 appearances for Porto last season. He's got lots of Champions League experience as well. I just think this is a really strong signing for them. You know, that team is still pretty solid in the attack, but their defense was really a problem last year. So they brought him in, and they also brought in Johnny Evans, who, you know, is a really strong, you know, center back when he's healthy, which he actually was a fair amount last season. So, you know, I just both those players as replacements for, you know, so one of the players that got released is Robert Huth.
Yeah.
So, I think Evans probably playing that West Morgan
spot. It spells trouble for Wes Morgan, doesn't it? Like you would think Johnny Evans and Harry Maguire would be the starting center pairing for them.
Exactly. I think Wes Morgan's probably, you know, he's like a legendary beloved figure at that team. So I'm sure he'll still be on the squad, but I feel like he's going to be like in that Yaya Toure role next season, you know,
Wes,
sixth appearance.
Come play in the MLS. We'd love to have you.
That's true. Liverpool, Fabinho joined from Monaco. He is not really a great fantasy asset, but he's a defensive midfielder. He's likely the Emery Chan replacement.
And Naby Keita, the redshirt freshman, is finally going to arrive at Liverpool.
Yep.
Central midfielder from RB Leipzig. So last season, he scored 9 goals, 7 assists for Leipzig. Looks great. He'll be fun.
Yeah. All of Liverpool's business so far looks really, really strong. That team just needed more squad depth in general, right? I mean, we saw that they made it the Champions League final. They lost one player.
Yeah, and all granted, fell apart.
There was just no one else to bring in, you know? I mean, you know, obviously they're not going to be able to, they don't have, you know, they're never going to be a team that has 100 million Gareth Bale on the bench, but you know, having just some extra squad depth is going to make a huge difference next year. Manchester City, Yaya Toure is out. Farewell, Yaya. This is probably the last time we'll ever talk about you in the podcast. So so long. And happy
birthday. Was fun. I mean, we got a blistering season out of Yaya. That
several really. Yeah, I mean, you know. First 3 or 4 years, you know, you and I were taking FPL seriously. He was fantastic.
Yeah. So, yeah, he will be missed. Newcastle signs Martin Dubravka full-time, permanent deal. pretty decent goalkeeper. And I think the talk online is, well done, Dubravka, but you'll probably be priced at 5.0 and we'll never speak of you again, yep, FPL-wise.
Exactly. Have to wait till he falls to 4.8 or something.
Yeah.
West Ham, you're excited about this guy, right?
It's a Diop. Diop. Could not be more excited. Now, 21-year-old French defender, central defender coming out of Toulouse, Ligue 1 side, scored 2 goals last season, but at 21 years old, hard to say whether that's a starting defender for West Ham. So we'll wait and see.
And then Wolverhampton, 2 really nice signings. One is a Mexican national team player, Raul Jimenez. He's got 31 goals and 120 appearances for Benfica. He was on the bench for Mexico's opening team, but I do think that he'll end up getting some minutes. And so another reason to pay attention to that Mexican national team during the World Cup. And then Rui Patricia?
Your guess is as good as mine, man.
apologies to Portuguese listeners. Starting goalkeeper for Portugal. He's got 70 caps for them. 460 appearances for Sporting, even though he's only 30 years old. And he's kept 179 clean sheets.
That seems like a big number.
It does seem like a big number. The question is, what price is he going to start at? I guess you can't price him at 4.5, right? Because...
The track record and also the World Cup bump. I'd be curious to see how far Portugal goes here and how that influences the FPL price. Yeah, but nobody is going to want a Wolverhampton GK at 5.0.
If he's at 4.5, he's going to be in everybody's team. Maybe at 5.0, he's worth it too. I mean, you know, but it's hard to have a 5.0 goalkeeper on a promoted squad, right? That's a tough sell.
That's a burned Leno price, 5.0.
It's a burned Leno price. Brandon, that's the podcast. I hope everybody enjoyed listening. I hope you stuck with it through the end. If you would like to support the podcast and help us pay for this trip to the United Kingdom to meet up with our FPL friends and watch some games, please visit patreon.com/alwayscheating. You can also find us on Twitter at twitter.com/hailcheaters and Facebook at facebook.com/alwayscheating.
And while you're here, while we have your attention, please subscribe to the podcast and rate and review. If you subscribe on Apple Podcasts, go into the iTunes store, give us 5 stars. And if you have a moment, write us a nice review. It really helps out the podcast a lot. And you can also subscribe on Acast, on Stitcher, wherever it is that you do get your podcasts. So yeah, keep enjoying the World Cup. It's a pretty good World Cup, right?
It's hard to have a bad World Cup, honestly, but I'm enjoying it. There aren't as many of those one-sided. I mean, Sweden, South Korea was probably the only genuine dud, I would say, of the opening fixtures. It was the only one that didn't really have anything redeeming about it.
Go Senegal. We didn't really talk a lot about Senegal on this podcast, but I think that they're emerging as a fan favorite. So
totally.
Come on,
and Mexico and Serbia.
Yeah, there's so many fan favorites. We love all the teams. John Obi Mikel, give us a reason to talk about you the next time we podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Please do. All right, Brandon, I will see you next week.
Bye. Hail cheaters.
Bye.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.